All right, so we're speaking today with Sandra Gervis, a local, I guess, Columbusonian.
Columbusite.
Yeah,
I know. Or disease. Anyway, go on.
Parasite.
Parasite. Sorry. Serious. Okay.
All right. Can you tell me a little bit about your career history and the work you've been doing here in Ohio?
I started out, I always tell people when I do talks about writing, is I started out knowing nobody. So really, I graduated from Miami in sociology and psychology, and I think what that gave me was interviewing skills. But I did a lot of writing in high school for the high school newspaper, some writing in college. And when I had my daughter like 30 years ago, I decided that I wanted to try my hand as a writer, as a journalist, more or less. Back when I was in college, we really had two choices. We could go the English language route, you know, the classical route, or you could go the newspaper reporter route, and neither of those really appealed to me. So I kind of started on my own, just writing stuff for publications that didn't pay anything and, you know, meeting as many people as I could, and I kind of worked my way up that way. That's basically it. I mean, I just kind of started out with small, and I started, like, writing for, like Columbus Dispatch and Living Single, which is a defunct magazine now, doing small things for Ohio Magazine. And then I did a lot for the Country Living, which was not the national one, but the one with the Ohio Rural Electric Power. And that led to my first book, America's Strangest Museums, which was originally known as the Cockroach Hall of Fame and 101 other off-the-wall museums. But it was because of all the experience that I had writing about Ohio museums that that book came about. And that kind of established me in that track of my career. It kind of established me as an Ohio writer. And that from that, the day trips from Columbus book, and from that, the Ohio Curiosities book came. Mm-hmm. So that was the genesis of all that.
All right. Now, you've done an extensive amount of writing for magazines. Do you still write for magazines, or what is your primary focus now?
Well, my primary focus is books. You know, I do some magazine writing, but my real passion is writing books. I have some pet projects that I want to do. One of them is my second novel called Country Club Wives. It's also set in Ohio. It's about women, money, and homeless animals. And it's a satire. It's set in the suburb of, and I'm putting the hands up with the quotation marks, New Wellington. So, you know, you draw your own inferences. But it's really something that I'm real passionate about. The other passion I want to do is I want to do a book on presidential libraries. I think the election of President Obama has really spurred an interest in these libraries and in all things presidential. And there are other things that I do that are my passion. And then there are other things that I do for money and because I also enjoy them. I do a lot of medical writing, and I love that, and I enjoy that. So as far as the traditional going out and querying magazines, and I do some of that, yes, you know, when something comes along, like I'm doing a story on Florida for a travel magazine in a couple of months, hopefully, if they don't fold, you know. And a lot of that has come about. A lot of that has stopped because of what's going on with the economy, because they're not buying as much stuff. So I hope that answers your question.
Yeah, absolutely. Oh, Nonconformists. That's another one of your books, correct?
Careers for Nonconformists. Yes. And that's another idea that I'd like to develop more fully about, because I think that more and more people are becoming self-employed. And that book, part of that book deals with that, and the other part of it deals with careers. And I'd like to do another book about how to really survive as a self-employed individual. So that's another idea that I'd like to work on.
Oh, I was just going to say that's excellent, because as you said, when you're training in composition and literature in college, you know, you're either going to be an English teacher or they shove you into journalism, and they never kind of demarcate anywhere in between, which I think that there is a way to make some money and you know, kind of explore your passions.
Yeah, I think so too. I think that, you know, it's not an easy thing. I think that you need to have the background in it, you know, and you need to have the experience in it and work full time for a while. And then you take it from there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you take it from there. And I think that because companies are downsizing so much, more and more people are going to be based at home.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they are going to be working from home because companies don't want to spend. They don't want to pay the retirement. They don't want to pay the health care.
Mm-hmm.
And people are going to really have to be innovative in doing that.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the funny thing was, when I first started freelancing back in prehistoric era, 30 years ago, I was regarded as an oddity, you know, because who, what kind of stuff you go out and you get a, you know, work in an office. And now I'm the one, you know, not that I have so much job security because I don't, but I'm we're all in the same boat. I have friends who are full-time jobs and they are scared to death, you know, and there's no job security in anything. So I figure you might as well do what you like. And I've seen, the sad thing is I've seen friends of mine who have worked at jobs that they have not particularly cared for, looking forward to their retirement, and then their retirement accounts are gone, or half of them are gone. So the bottom line is do what you really love and just hope that it works out. Figure it out, you know?
Yeah, it's interesting to see the way the economy is doing that to everyone. Absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, unfortunately. It's exciting when you do get to kind of succeed at what you are passionate about.
But it is, but it also comes with the downside of it is you have to deal with a lot of rejection. You just have to keep trying.
Yeah.
You absolutely have to keep trying. I cannot emphasize the importance of persistence. I cannot emphasize the importance of understanding that you're going to have lots of setbacks and lots of rejections. The only way I'm getting through finishing my second novel is that I refuse to think about what I'm going to do when I have to try to find a publisher because I can't sell it until it's written completely. I will not. I mean, I just won't, you know, it's not going to work. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I took a magazine writing class and I think, you know, the first lesson was you're not going to make any money for 5 years. It's definitely a tough place to get started.
Yes, it is. It is. And then when you're dealing in a lot of the big magazines and that people don't realize, it's like, oh, I'd love to be published in Red Book or in Ladies Home Journal. I can't speak so much to places like The Atlantic or The New York Times because I don't have colleagues who write for them. But I know I have colleagues who write for these big magazines that pay $2 or $3 a word. But it's when you break it down to the amount of time, they're not making that much money because everything's done by committee and they change their minds and the person has to rewrite and edit. So, you know, it's one thing to think, oh, I'm going to write a piece and it's going to be published in, you know, Ladies Home Journal or Red Book or Science or whatever these big consumer magazines are. But what they don't realize is that they have to meet their needs.
Yeah, absolutely. We'll shift a little bit to writing about Ohio and Columbus. Now, how long have you lived in Columbus?
Very, very, very long time. let me think. 35 years.
Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. I don't want to talk about how old I am.
We don't have to cover that.
No, I don't. I know. A very long time.
And a lot, I mean, and your books are about Columbus and Ohio and traveling in Ohio.
Right.
What is your favorite part about writing about Ohio?
People don't know a lot about it, like in outside of Ohio. And there's just a lot of stuff, you know. I mean, I'm always learning something new, you know. It's like there's always something that is new and unexpected that you don't know. I mean, it's never like, yeah, I know this. Yeah, I know this. Next. I mean, it's not like that with Ohio. It's very diverse and, you know, very interesting. Columbus kind of, you know, people say, and I say it myself, it's like, how did I end up here? I mean, it's a nice place and I really like it, but I'm still here. You know, and every so often we'll get into these discussions about, yeah, I'm still here too. How did that happen? I mean, it's not a bad thing, but it's like, it just happens. You kind of get, I don't know. It's hard to explain.
No, absolutely. I've fallen in love with the city as well. So in the past 4 years that
I've been living here. Yeah, absolutely.
So where else do you like to travel to?
I love going overseas. And back in the few years ago when the travel was a little bit better, you know, before 9/11, I used to be able to travel a little bit more overseas. But the market, travel market, is not about overseas travel.
No.
So I went to Italy last fall and I loved it. I was only there a couple of days because I was on a cruise. I dearly want to go to Australia. I would love to go to, it sounds kind of weird, Dubai and Saudi Arabia. I would love to go to Vietnam. These are places that I've written about or been interested in that I think are really timely and relevant places to visit. The more traditional places, I'm not so interested in. I have been to England and Germany and France, and I love England. I want to go back there. But the more traditional places, I not so much. You know, I like kind of off the beaten path type things.
You must see everything with a writer's eye.
Yeah.
How do you go about exploring a new place?
It depends on what I'm doing. If I'm doing a travel story, then of course I look at the material that is given to me and whatever catches my eye. You know, I try to find a specific angle of it or a specific aspect of it. Like, for example, I'm going to Fort Myers, Florida in a couple of weeks. And my story idea is the islands of Fort Myers. That's like, I always try to find a unifying theme. I did a story on St. Augustine, Florida, and the unifying theme was the historic part of it.
Yeah.
When I travel, I always look with that eye. But then sometimes when I travel, it doesn't gel, you know? Like I went on this Greek cruise. I went to Venice and Greece and Croatia and Turkey. And I didn't end up writing the story. The magazine ended up not being published. But what the guy wanted, it would have been hard for me to write. Because there was no unifying theme. I wasn't excited about writing it.
Right.
This Florida story, I know exactly what I'm looking for. So it's kind of weird sometimes when you go on trips and it may not be what you think it's going to be. And that can be very difficult to write, you know, because when you write, it's got to be pretty true.
Right. My other question was, do you have to love a place to write about it?
No.
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 Okay, good.
Absolutely not.
What about, you said you've been in Ohio for a long time. How do you continue to find inspiration somewhere?
Sometimes when, like, if an editor will say, okay, I have four stories for you, four ideas, and there's one on this and one on this and one on this and one on this. And I say, I want that one and I want that one. And it's not always the one that he would, you know, the most obvious or the easiest one. Sometimes I like the harder one.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, oh, yeah, I like that. It's like an oh, yeah, kind of feeling.
Mm-hmm.
And it never goes away. So,
good.
You know, it's something that I've had my whole life. And I've always got stuff. I'm always thinking about something new.
What's the strangest article you've ever had to write?
I'll tell you the strangest article I never wrote. That's a better one. I was asked by a publication to do an article on excavating outhouses. And, you know, people that go and they excavate stuff from outhouses. And I said, absolutely no way. I don't think so. That is a better answer.
I hope it didn't hurt your career to
pass
on a story
like
that.
He wasn't exactly thrilled with me, but I just said, look, I can't do this. I just, you know, it just is. It's just like, ooh, I do not want to write about people who excavate stuff from sewage systems. And it wasn't, it was just so gross to me.
Yeah.
You know, and I was like, I don't, and I'd rather say something like that than write it and do a crappy job.
Well, you can let one of those startup writers do it if they're desperate for a job.
Well, it's not even being desperate. I mean, you can be desperate, but it'll show in your work.
Yuck.
I mean, seriously, I really try very hard to write things that I know are going to work for me. And I think that's another thing. As writers, yeah, you can be desperate, but you also can be like, I think I can do a good job with this. I'm not in love with it, but yeah, I can do a good job because I feel I've got the material. I mean, that's happened to me too. A lot of times sometimes I do ghostwriting, and I did ghostwriting for a business book, and there was no substance to the material. And I was like, you know, it just didn't work out.
Mm-hmm.
And there was no substance. And I tried, and I rewrote and rewrote, and the guy was not happy. And it's because there's no substance to it, and I can't BS. And, you know, I just can't, so.
Right, and it shows in your writing.
And that's what the real problem was because, and I wish them luck in finding somebody else who can do that. Maybe there probably are people who can do that, so I'm sure they'll find somebody, but.
Yeah. What's your favorite things to read?
Oh, just anything. Any fiction. I'm reading the story of Edgar Sawtelle now.
Okay.
And that's a really good book. I like, you know, a lot of funny, you know, girly, sarcastic, girly type novels, which is the one I'm working on now, like Confessions of a Shopaholic. And Jennifer Weiner is a really good author locally. And her name escapes me. She did, Jennifer Cruzy. Yeah,
okay.
Jennifer Cruzy. She's really good. But I read a lot of serious stuff, too. I mean, like this Edgar Sawtelle book is really good. And I like the guy that wrote She's Come Undone. I'm looking forward to reading his novel. I haven't bought it yet. And then I like murder. I like everything, you know, any fiction. I like nonfiction if it's funny and sarcastic. Don't like to read a lot of nonfiction informational books. Okay, maybe because it's what too close to what I do.
Mm-hmm.
Too much of a post-person's holiday. So.
Now, I know that two of your books that are out now, Pipe Dreams and Where Did All the Flower Children Go, are relatively historical novels. Are they both fiction or is just one fiction?
No, The Pipe Dreamers is a novel.
Mm-hmm.
And it wasn't really historical when I was writing it. I was actually living through it. Where Have All the Flower Children Gone is a nonfiction book published by University of Mississippi Press. It is consists of interviews, pictures, and journalistic narratives about different aspects of the Vietnam protest movement. It deals with the movement itself. It deals with the conservatives. It deals with my friends, and it deals with the six aspects of the Vietnam protests.
Okay.
It deals with the protesters. It deals with the conservatives. It deals with communes and former radicals, draft evaders, expatriates, and conscientious objectors. And I talk about Vietnam and Iraq also. And it also deals with my friends and my peers. So those are the six aspects of it. And it was a book that took me 5 years to write. And it was written over the course of September 11th happened and the war in Iraq happened. It was originally due, I think, in the year 2000. And then I got divorced and I couldn't really work for a year and a half. And then over that period of time, all that other stuff, you kind of started to evolve, and I'm kind of glad it did because it makes the book much more relevant and interesting to what's going on today.
Yeah, I definitely think so. And especially for a war that is so objected to, and but you still don't see the same, I don't know if it's energy or outspokenness in public.
Well,
is there a different venue for that now?
Well, I think that it's a different war. I think that the people who, and this is something that I'm going to address in my new novel, because there's always that underlying theme. It always seems to come through in all my writing, that the generation, you know, your generation, the young men who are, and women who are returning, are not against what's going on over there. They believe that they're helping people, and there's a whole different mindset about that. There's a lot of people who object to the Iraq situation and think that it's wrong. I'm one of them. I don't agree with it. But then there's a whole other mindset of people who think that they're going over there and they're really helping these people. Okay, and I want to put that in my new novel because a young man that my main character's son, he goes over there and he works with farm animals because he's going to be a veterinarian. You know, he believes that he's doing the right thing and he comes back believing that.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that the other thing that people really don't realize is that when they send these people over there, they train them, they teach them. In Vietnam, they would be in boot camp for 6 weeks and they'd throw them into the jungle. Here, they're trained. They have learned some lessons with regards to whether or not it's right or wrong. They are teaching their soldiers a little bit more about how to deal with this kind of situation.
Have you spoken with veterans about the situation? Or,
well, my son was in the military. He never went overseas because he was injured, but I talked to him about it a lot, and he has a lot of friends who are over there, and we talk about it. And I have young people who are involved with veterans, and we talk about that. I have not really spoken with any veterans directly. No, it would be interesting to do. I'd love to do that. But like I said, the sense that I get is that they do, that they don't hate it over there, that they don't resent their service, that they think that they're helping. And then I could be wrong, but the sense that I, as a person, get that, that's what I'm getting. So,
I actually live with a veteran for about a year and a half, right after he had gotten back. And he didn't talk about it a lot. It was always interesting when we'd be having a few drinks and he would, you know, start talking about it a little more. He was around his friends. I've never heard him say he regretted. He was an Army, or he was a Marine Reserve, so he was still over there for about a year.
Wow.
You know, came back unharmed pretty much. But then now he's dealing with post-traumatic, without talking about that too much, personal stuff. It's interesting to see the way that it's affecting people, and I think that part of it is the society that they're returning to and the way that they're, I don't want to say they're treated, but it's hard to fight a war when you have so many people that are against it.
Right.
I think that...
They're not mistreated. No one is...
No, absolutely not.
Yeah, I mean, everyone gives them the respect that they deserve, I think. And I think that's another important thing, too, is that we are, you know, treating them with respect. And they do deserve respect, whether or not we agree with what's going on over there. They're over there putting their lives on the line, you know,
absolutely.
And that's definitely something.
Well, it would be very cool to hear from some more veterans, and it's... I don't know how to get him to talk about it because this is someone I lived with for like a year.
Right.
And he still was not very talkative. So I don't know if it's an issue of trust or if they're just...
Well, I think it's really hard for them. I know for my son, one of his best friends was killed in Iraq. And he was really devastated about that.
Mm-hmm.
And I could tell he was just like, you know, torn up about it. So, you know, and he doesn't really talk about it too much. And he says, I wish I could have gone. I wanted to go over there because my buddies were over there and I feel bad that I didn't get to go. So, it's, you know, I don't think we should have war at all. That's my opinion. But
yeah, absolutely. Regardless, the guys who are over there have done hopefully pretty awesome things, and a lot. Most of them have come back.
Only missing a few arms and legs and psychologically damaged. But other than that, they're fine.
You said you're going to Michigan in May to talk about your books on one of the college campuses up there. Can you tell me a little bit more about that?
Actually, they contacted me, which was really kind of nice. Macomb Community College, it's in Michigan. I don't know. It's somewhere near Detroit. They are doing a whole big program about the 60s. And if I recall correctly, they're having people like Gloria Steinem, and I can't remember the other, some really big names. So they invited me to come and talk about my books with high school students and anybody else for an hour. And so I'm going to do that. And Miami University, where we talked about, they also did an oral history project about Rowan Hall. And I participated in that, too, with a takeover, April 15th takeover. Mm-hmm. So it's really cool that people are interested in the 60s. It was an unbelievable time to live through. It's kind of cool now because with President Obama being inaugurated, it's kind of the same thing. I remember as a child being very excited about John F. Kennedy's inauguration. And I was telling people who were born way after that, I have not seen this level of excitement since Kennedy was inaugurated when I was a kid. Mm-hmm. And they're like, really? I'm like, yeah, you know? And it's very cool to see that. It's almost a little bit like that mm-hmm. back then. I just hope that that continues.
I do too. And I hope that it's very cool to be a part of this. And from my parents, I've heard it's refreshing to see, you know, a new energy.
It is, and to see young people excited about him.
Oh, yeah. And I'm thrilled.
And I just, everything is crossed, and he's got a very difficult task ahead. That's for sure.
Definitely. Well, I'd like to thank you for coming out and talking with us today.
Thank you. It was fun.
Is there anything else that you want to talk about that I haven't kind of covered or poked at?
Well, just that, you know, for people that don't want to travel outside of Ohio or don't want to travel far, there are just a ton of things to do. And my book and other books about Ohio have that information. If you don't want to travel, you maybe can't physically, you can't afford it, or you have physical issues, you can never stop learning. And you don't have to go very far to explore. So that, I guess I want to conclude on that note.
Well, that's an awesome thing to hear, especially when, you know, vacations are a lot of times the first things to go when you have to cut your budget, your family
exactly.
budget.
Exactly, exactly.
So it's great to have stories written by people who love Ohio and are passionate about the area and the things that go on here. And I hope that they go out and pick up one of your books and get to tour Ohio a little bit with some of the knowledge you have to provide for them.
Oh, thank you very much. That's sweet.
All right. Thank you.
Uh-huh.